this is session number 4. So we review everything. It's fine that you're here for the first time is what I'm trying to say, I guess. So, but those that have been coming for a little while, because I get myself organized here, we'll start in. I usually ask everybody if they would please put their cell phones on silence. All of the handouts that are available are online, so you can get those at the Kadama Center website. I think you go to Meditation 101 and they should all be available to download. So you should be able to get all the past ones too. Anybody have any questions or anything from previous weeks? Nope. All right. We'll see if we do in a few minutes. We kind of get started here a little bit. We'll start out with just doing a little bit of meditation. And we have done a couple of different types of meditation up to this point. Mind like the sky or like the ocean, counting your breath, just focusing on the breath, like a bare attention meditation. So I'm going to let you kind of choose whatever you want to do. And we did a has anybody tried the 9-round breathing? You like that? Does it work out pretty well? Okay. Yeah. We'll do that to start with.
Good when you're not sick or something like that.
Oh, yeah. If you got a sinus infection, it's not ideal. But
better in the evening than in the morning.
Okay. When you've been sitting up for a while. So the thing with this is we'll block. If you download the actual meditation itself, it provides a lot more detail about the channels and that kind of stuff. But for the most part, what we're going to do is block one side, block our right nostril, and inhale through the left, and then block the left and exhale through the right. And there's a sequence of that. I may get it wrong, but that's fine. I don't know if it's left or right first, whatever. So we do that 3 times, in through the left, out through the right. And then 3 times we'll do in through the right and out through the left, which is just the opposite. And then 3 times we do in through both nostrils and out through both nostrils. And if while you do that, you can visualize kind of pure light going in, and you can actually see that kind of going into your cells. And then all the negativities kind of coming out like soot or something like that, that you're exhaling and they're kind of going out into the universe. So we want to try to do, it's kind of a purification meditation. So we'll do the 9-round breathing and then we'll just do whatever you want to do for a little while. If this is your first time, the idea is to kind of just stay focused on your breath, okay? And when your mind wanders, and it will, just gently bring it back to the breath. Recognize, oh, my mind's gotten off my breathing. Bring it back and start all over again and just kind of focus. And we're trying to build the ability to focus for a period of time on one particular thing. And we'll do some other types of meditations here in a few minutes after we do that. So there are, as a review, there's generally 7 points that we try to get. If you're sitting on the floor, that's fine. You know, your seat firmly on the floor. If you can sit on the cushion towards the front, it throws your hips forward, and that kind of opens up your pelvic area a little bit and allows you to sit a little straighter. If you're in a chair, feet flat on the floor, your back straight, kind of like a stack of coins. And then you want to kind of imagine a string at the top of your head that kind of pulls your head up, lets your chin kind of fall down. Your hands should be comfortable in your lap or in a traditional pose with your right hand inside the left hand, thumbs touching, or whatever is comfortable is fine. Your shoulders relaxed, your eyes closed or slightly open, and then the tongue resting at the roof of your mouth behind your front teeth. All right. And then set a motivation. We'll talk a little bit more about that tonight. You know, you battled the traffic to get here. There are a lot of other things that you could have done tonight, but you made a deliberate choice to come here and try to learn more about your mind. which will be a lifelong process, but will be well worth the effort. So set your motivation. You've come here to do this, so you're going to try as best you can. Just like if you're going to exercise class, you know, you set your motivation for doing that. So if you want to get in that position, take a few big breaths kind of in and out. Leave all your to-do lists and everything else off to the side for a while. And then we'll do that 9-round breathing. In through one side and out through the other 3 times. And then switch. And reverse that cycle. And in and out through both. Your mind has wandered off, gently bring it back to the breath. check to see if your mind has wandered. Gently bring it back. All right, we went a little longer that time than we've gone in the past. That was about 10 minutes. Was that uncomfortable for anybody? Was that a little too much? That was okay. Sometimes you start seeing people squirm a little bit and you know that might be about it. So you want to stop when you're comfortable. You don't want to push yourself to the point where you're uncomfortable. Some people say 21 minutes is about a good length to go. I don't know why they came up with 21 minutes. Alan Wallace, this is someone I read quite a bit. He's always into 21-minute sessions. So, and you're better off doing multiple short ones than to try to push and do a long one. So you want to stop when you feel comfortable. And you can mix them up. We talked about focus meditation and analytical meditation, and you know, you could do a session of one and then something else and kind of jump around a little bit too is another alternative, a good way to do it. So how did it go for the last week? And those of you that have got a real solid practice now or why you don't have a real solid practice now. Any problems, obstacles, successes, anything you want to share? Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
I can talk loud.
Yeah, I think Brian, because we have people listening at home? Okay. People couldn't make it past the fair crowd. So.
Yeah, mostly figuring out, you know, the best times of day, the best conditions for me to meditate in. I find that mornings are better.
Yeah.
If I do it at lunchtime, I do walking meditation now at lunch because otherwise I'll fall asleep.
Okay.
sometimes night times are good, but if it's too warm or too late in the day, you'd be falling asleep rather than focused.
Yeah, good. And that helps out a lot. Or you're starting to find out that helps out, you know. A lot of people do it in the morning. I'm a morning. I do better at the morning. Not, again, not everybody's like that, but I used to get up and I would, you know, make the coffee and maybe look at the headlines and look at an email or two and then go do my meditation. And now I don't do that because I think as you go throughout the day and your mind gets cluttered up with stuff, you know, as you shake that little snowball, that snow globe, it's harder to get things settled or else you fall asleep. So I find that in the morning, first thing, while I get up out of weight, you know, out of sleep, to be able to sit to be helpful too. So, but again, everybody's got their own, you know, find, like he did, find some time that works good for you. So, anybody else? Problems or good things? Yes, ma'am, over here.
Like I said last week, I used to have problems, anxieties with counting the breath, but during the week I read an article by Lama Thupten Yeshe, and there is something he said that is very helpful to me. He said, don't think about being a meditator, don't think about being humble, don't think about being egoistic, just be. Just don't think about anything. Just be there. And that is really helping me. It makes me feel like I just don't think about anything and I just do it. And it's becoming a pleasing experience to me.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, okay. So maybe you were trying, is that it? You were trying to meditate. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. Yeah, so this is all about not trying to do anything, right? But just watch as our mind wanders. Good. Thank you for sharing that. Lama Yeshe is up here. I can't see him, but he's behind me somewhere. Anybody else? Anybody have any troubles that they're running into or questions? Anything that's unclear? It's all unclear. That's the point.
I think for me the hardest thing is getting to a point where I'm comfortable because I like being on the floor, but my knees don't like being on the floor.
Okay.
And so, and I know I could do a seated meditation. Actually, I'm looking at getting like the small kneeling bench so that I can maybe get off. It's just I have bad knees.
Okay.
They get angry. So that's distracting to me. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm getting a little bit better, but what ends up making me lose my focus is the pain in my knees.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that can happen.
Because I'm getting old.
Yeah, well, no, that happens. You know, your leg falls asleep, something like that. Yeah, that happens. And, you know, experiment with different things.
Yeah.
Straighten your legs, move around a little bit. Some people put pillows underneath their legs, you know, on either side. More pillows, like I have to have two or three sometimes I have to sit up on. So you just have to kind of play around till you find something that's comfortable and move back and forth. But that's just one of those things you kind of struggle through. But thank you. So hopefully if you're doing something regularly, you begin to kind of set routine and you begin to establish some kind of habit. Even if it's not real solid yet, you know, you kind of begin to develop that habit of mind. And, you know, we talked earlier here to set the motivation. There's four steps that we kind of discussed. So calming your mind, you know, kind of getting yourself calmed down, or finding a time of day when your mind is calm and not too disturbed. So that's kind of the first step. Maybe have an area, we talked about that, having a specific area that you go to all the time is helpful. And you can begin putting putting articles around that maybe help you. You know, it might be flowers, it might be pictures of someone or people, any number of things. You know, just kind of, you begin to develop an altar and have something that kind of, that's your spot, that when you go, it begins to develop a sense of being a little bit sacred or something, okay? Setting your motivation, you know, why are you doing this? Why am I sitting here and doing this meditation? Because, again, a lot of times I think we get pulled away. You know, we have all sorts of excuses for not doing it. And if we really find that there's benefit to doing this, like I'll use the example of physical exercise again, then you try to establish some sort of pattern in doing it. And you'll develop as you do it more and more. Things will become more pleasing. You'll get through some of the aches and pains. You'll find ways to make it more of a habit, and it'll be something that you begin to really look forward to. It's kind of like your little safe spot, so to speak. What was I saying? Set your motivation for why you're doing that, you know, and get your mind set with that. And then do the meditations, you know, try to develop some discipline. But again, play around with things. This is probably a bad example, so I don't know. Geshe talks about, you know, crow's nests are kind of all built like this. They're all sorts of different ways. Sometimes I think my practice is like that, because I'll read something, and then something will resonate with me, and then I'll have to read something else that's connected with that. Or I'll spend some time, you know, doing just focus meditation for a while, and then do an analytical meditation. So, you know, you can kind of jump around a little bit. I don't think there's harm in that. That's what helps me. So that would be the actual meditation for whatever length of time you decide that you're going to do that, even if it's a short period of time. And then once you've completed it, the dedication is kind of the other piece of it. So that's kind of like sealing the deal. Some of the notes that I was looking at here earlier, you know, they said if you want to go on a trip, you have to set the intention of going on a trip. So it's the same with this. And then the dedication at the end. Why have I done this? I've done this for the benefit of myself and all the people around that I'm going to encounter today, or, you know. And you can begin to expand that dedication. So we, you know, we reach a point where we dedicate to all sentient beings, to every living creature. And that kind of it seals the deal. It's like hitting the save button on your Word document or whatever it is, you know. So that kind of sets the die, and that kind of helps stabilize your practice a little bit. So if you do those things, the motivation, the calming the mind, the motivation, the meditation, and then the dedication at the end, it just strengthens your meditation practice a little bit. Does that make sense? Any questions or thoughts about that? Find a place. Have you developed a place where you can kind of sit and do things? Okay, good. And hopefully things where you're not disturbed. If you have a partner that does meditation, that's always handy if you have someone else that you can share that space with, you know. It doesn't always work that way, but that's one of the ways that you may be able to kind of reinforce things. So we're going to do some other meditations here in a little bit, but I want you to break up in groups and we're going to talk about what benefits you've found so far in doing the meditations now that you've had 4 weeks of practice, right? Or not, right? So maybe talk about the benefits primarily. I know last time we talked about some of the obstacles that we had, so we want to look at, you know, if you've begun to notice some things that have subtly changed in your life since you've been doing this, you'll see changes. You know, if you do this regularly, within a month or two, you'll start noticing some real subtle changes. You know, other people might notice it sooner than you will, but you'll notice it. So, yes, ma'am.
I want to repeat the question.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was pondering it. The question was, what kind of changes did I see? And I've been doing this for a fair while, and the changes still continue. I think things don't bother me as much. You know, I don't worry about things as much as I used to. I used to get anxious. I used to have a lot of worries about things. And I just kind of, I could let go of a lot of that stuff now. Cause I recognize that everything's impermanent. We did that meditation on change last week. Everything's impermanent. And that stuff begins to kind of creep into your life. On the way here, you know, I was running late and I was getting anxious about being late, you know, because of the traffic. And I was worried that people were sitting here. But one of the sayings that I've read some time ago, you hear is, I think it was Shanti David said that if you have a problem, you know, there's no need to worry. If you can fix it, don't worry, just fix it. If you can't fix it, don't worry, you can't fix it, you know? And so that's kind of become more of just a thing that I think I've picked up on. There's a book by, I think his name is Sam Harris, called 10% Happier. Somebody read that?
Yes.
Did I have that right?
Dan Harris,
I'm sorry. He was a journalist. And he was, the subtitle was, you know, the voice in your head's an idiot. I don't think he said idiot, but the voice in your head, you know, is an idiot. Don't listen to that voice in your head. But he decided that at the end, you know, he was about 10% happier. And he thought that was pretty good, you know. It's subtle. We had a friend that I was doing some prison work with that, you know, he used to have a lot of anger, and he noticed that had gradually gone away over a period of time, to the point where his Andre, some of you might know him, a number of years ago, over Christmas break, we were taking a break from prison, his son got stabbed and killed, 21 years old. And, you know, the prisoners had asked in classes prior, you know, what would happen if something happened to you or whatever family? And he said, I really don't know how I'll react to that. I like to think I'd react okay to it. And after that incident where his son got killed, he actually, you know, he said he had a lot of forgiveness for the person that did it. He didn't have nearly the hostility and anger that he would have had prior to his practice. Now, that took years for him to develop to that level. But it's so gradual, you know. He didn't know what would happen, but he ended up trying to get a more lenient sentence for the person that killed the son, which is a whole lot different than a lot of people would have handled a situation like that. So that's a whole lot of what what might change, I don't know. You know? It's gradual. It's like sanding a block of wood or polishing a mirror or something, you know? It's slow. It's subtle. And I think other people, you know, it's like when you do physical exercise, the changes are slow. And other people may notice them sooner than you do, especially if you don't see them all the time, you know. They'll say, you seem to be a little calmer, a little mellower, or whatever, you know. So.
So I only started to try to meditate probably within the last 6 months. And obviously I've been coming to your class. I've made it all. But one of the things that I've noticed about myself, and, you know, I think in the last class you talked about meditating on death, which, because my mom had just passed.
Right.
It's an easy one for me to go to and that sort of thing. But, you know, what I will say is that I feel like my emotional stability is better than where I might have been.
Yeah.
In just kind of taking it in and trying to breathe through it and that kind of thing. So, you know, I think it's depends on what you're working towards too, I guess.
Right.
You know, I'm mentally working towards that, so, you know, and that's part of my meditation, but I would say better.
Yeah.
Not perfect.
Yeah.
I still have an emotional breakdown every once in a while, but I do think it's making me more calm and kind of taking it in better. So.
Yeah, it's.
So that's.
Yeah, you kind of chip away at it, you know? You think about these things and you focus on it for a little bit and it changes.
Huh.
Yes.
So in yoga, they'll say to set your intention. And you say to set our motivation.
The same thing. Yeah.
Then if we're supposed to be clearing our minds and just focused on breathing, how is it that you work through that motivation or intention? Are you supposed to be thinking about it? Are you supposed to, I get a bit conflicted with that, those statements and then what we're trying to do when we actually meditate.
Okay, thank you. So the intention is at the beginning of your session, however long your session is, right? So I'm going to go do my meditations now. So I go to my area where I would do it. I have a little ritual that I go through. You know, I say some things, have some mantras and things. I sit down, and I set, you know, the intention is I'm going to do this for the sake of becoming a better person. That's my intention. And then I actually do whatever meditations I decide to do. So the intention is kind of, like I said, if you want to go trip somewhere, you know, you make the decision you're going to do that trip. You're going to set that intention. So I don't necessarily continue to set that intention throughout, but because I've set it at the beginning, it kind of sets up the meditation going forward. Does that make sense?
Actively thinking? Are you actively thinking about how to be a better person, you know, to follow your intention? Or are you just letting it come to you?
From a meditation standpoint?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we'll do, you were here last week, right? Mm-hmm. We did the thing on water. Do you remember the dirty water?
Yeah.
So that, I don't know what that conjures up for people when you do that meditation that we did on water. For me, it gives me a sense of gratitude for what I have, a sense of contentment for what I have. So those are the emotional things that I want to increase. I want to feel more gratitude all the time. I want to feel more content all the time. And so by practicing thinking about those things, neurologically, I'm creating these pathways that make it easier and easier for me to see the world through a lens of contentment, you know, and gratitude. But I set my intention before I start the whole session. And then my session might include 10 minutes of trying to focus heavily on gratitude. I kind of delved into precious human, our human birth last week a little bit when we kind of talked about some of the things, and I'll do one from Kathleen McDonald's book this evening that takes us a little deeper into that. And the idea is just to really, really build that mental muscle around how fortunate we are instead of how unfortunate we are, which is where our minds typically go. We usually, you know, like I said, we're Velcro for negative stuff, so we tend to dwell on things that go wrong. And we literally meditate on negative things all the time. So the idea is that we're trying to force ourselves to think about and meditate, if we use that term, become familiar with positive things, so that the more we do that over and over and over again, just like lifting the weights over and over again, that becomes stronger, and it rises more naturally. We'll see something that touches our heart, you know, that may not have otherwise. You know, the random acts of kindness. There's just all sorts of little ways that you can begin playing at. And ultimately, the goal of all of this is to change our whole framework and lens, the whole context with from which we view the world around us, to be more positive. And the practice, you know, as you begin to practice, you realize you have the power to do that. That's actually about the only thing you have the power to do, is to change your perspective about something that occurs to you or in front of you or with you or whatever the case is. We get to choose our attitude on how we encounter those situations, you know. Whether we're going to encounter them in a way that, you know, if I see something happen to somebody good, am I going to be jealous? I can choose to be jealous or envious, or I can choose to find joy in the happiness that they have. Our minds tend to go towards the envy and jealousy. We're kind of hardwired to think that way, right? But we find that there's a lot more pleasure, deep, eudaimonic type of pleasure, not hedonic, but, you know, real deep, meaningful pleasure in seeing delight for somebody else. But we have to push our minds to do that initially. You know, we're creating a maze. Did I talk about the maze the last time, a little paper maze? Sometimes I'll do that in classes. I'll hand out, you know, those little, you know, you try to get from point A to the end, the little maze, and let people do them. And I ask, you know, so when you finish this, how long does it take? And it might take a minute and a half for a group of 30 people to do it. And then I have them flip the paper over, and it's the exact same maze on the other side. I saw another person that does meditation do this thing. So you flip it over on the other side, the exact same maze. So now we time them. That might take half the length of time. So now there's another one. I give them a third one. You know, so what that's going to take? That's going to take 20 seconds. By the time they've done it four or five times, they just kind of go through it. That's neuroplasticity. That's what we're doing with our brains. You know, when we try to conjure up contentment and gratitude and delight for somebody rather than envy, we have to push our minds through this maze in order to make it happen. But the second and third time and the fourth time, it just becomes easier and easier and easier, and that just becomes your new mode of thinking. So, again, it's a slow process, but it's something that you have control over as individuals, and it's pretty much the only thing that you have control over, you know? Everything else is just happening out there, and you get to choose how you confront it. So, I'm sorry, I kind of went way off whatever your question about intention, but sometimes I do that. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay.
So my question kind of piggybacks onto that and understanding the difference between concentration meditation versus an analytical one and where that line is at, because, like, gratitude seems like it could delve quickly into, like, analyzing, or maybe that is analyzing.
That is, yeah.
And then it's concentration where you're just trying to blank out or, like, push all of the thoughts out and just clear your mind completely, and then gratitude and, like, patience, and that's more like analytical?
Yeah, so when we talk about analytical, there's some subdivisions of that too. So there's, like, you know, you can analyze reality in terms of we're all going to die, okay? I mean, that's an analytical meditation, a death meditation. Some people would consider that morbid, but if you start doing, recognizing that, wow, this could be my last day on earth, and you begin to live your life that way, I mean, that's an analytical meditation. But also the emotional, what we would call emotion, in Tibet, emotion is the equivalent of a thought. So the emotional things like gratitude and generosity and kindness and forgiveness, those can all be analytical meditations too. The concentration or focus meditations is where we just try to gain control over our mind. So we can concentrate on our breath, we can concentrate on an object, we can expand our consciousness so that it's wide, like the sky or the ocean. We talked about those meditations, and then any ideas, just recognize that thoughts and emotions come up. So we don't become attached to them. We just look for them. The focus concentration allows us to kind of build focus on something without our mind drifting off. Okay? And then the idea is that when you catch your mind drifting off, you pull it back on your focus. And that focus becomes stronger and stronger, and you're able to concentrate better and better. The two go hand in hand in when we do an analytical meditation. What was the one that we did last time that somebody said they had a real, we talked about it at the end. There's something that one of the analytical meditations we did. Pardon me? Was it the water? Might have been. Something where they had a sense of, maybe it was gratitude or something that came up. So that, once that emotion arises in your mind or your heart, then the concentration allows you to kind of lock in on it and hold it as long as possible. So we're doing a rep and then we're trying to hold it, you know, try to keep that, to build that mental muscle even stronger. So that's kind of how the two fit hand in hand. And you have to continually practice both, you know, the concentration. Ideally, from what I understand, is once you've built up a level of compassion or love to a certain degree, and you can lock in on that, you can stay locked in from that as long as you want to, and that just becomes very blissful. Okay. Some of the real long-term meditators, the trouble they have is they want to stay there and not keep moving on down the path. But, you know, this is deep stuff. But ideally, if you can build up those emotions and then hold on to those for a long time, it's quite pleasurable because those emotions feel good. I mean, they're not, you know, I talked about hedonic versus the deeper kind of things that we get from generosity, you know, from giving something. And those deeper eudaimonic type of emotions feel really good. So if we can hold on to those for a long time, it's enjoyable. And it doesn't cost you a thing, you know. You don't have to buy anything. You don't have to do anything. All you have to do is sit and make this stuff come up in your mind, you know. Sure. Yes, sir.
Are you
just coming with the microphone. We have to... No, that's fine.
So I wonder, can you explain more about the analytical meditation?
Uh-huh.
And what's the definition of it? And what's the difference with concentrating the focus meditation?
Okay, yeah. We'll do an analytical meditation. And were you here last week?
Yeah.
Okay. So we did the water, we did with the dirty water, you know, we stopped and thought about what would it be like to be in that situation, you know, and then recognize how easy it is for us to have clean water here and the sensation that arises. So that we're kind of analyzing reality is really what we're trying to do. At some point, if you come to some of the other classes, they'll talk about things like emptiness or impermanence. We talked about that. We talked about everything changing moment by moment. We don't live our lives that way, but if we analyze reality, that's the way things really are. You know, we live as if everything's permanent and forever, but it's not. So that would be an analytical meditation as opposed to just focusing on our breathing or our breath.
So if it's possible, we can see in the analytical meditation actually is your mentor is involved in it to analyze it, and then reach something good emotion or something, then hang on it. But in the concentrated meditation, actually, you just observe it, not involve it.
Right. But the concentration builds up our ability to concentrate and focus.
Yeah.
So we use the two hand in hand. The two go together, you know, to analyze and then to concentrate. But we have to do them both. But once we have met our goal of the analysis, then we can concentrate on that on that outcome. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, yeah.
You are. Okay, small group. Any other questions before we break up? Talk about some of the benefits that you may have begun to notice a little bit, perhaps, maybe, kind of. And then we'll get back together. Wow, that's a loud one. All right. All right. Does anybody have anything they want to share? Or not? Yeah. Got it all figured out. Is that helpful? Was there some stuff that you guys discussed? Okay. Anything? Anybody want to share about that? That's fine if you don't have to, but it's up to you. Here we go.
Is it on?
Yeah. We were talking about different times that you meditate and how when you work, it would be great to be able to do something in the middle of the day, but there's usually not a conducive space. So I wondered if you could talk at all about like walking meditation.
Yeah, I don't do that very much. I should. Does anybody here have a good walking? Yeah, you do.
I use the Insight Timer app.
Okay.
I use the Insight Timer app. When you're walking around, put headphones on, use that. Starts off really simple. Just gets you to be mindful of your footsteps and how your feet feel moving across the ground and how your muscles work together and things like that, how that feels. And I'm really early into it, but I'm sure it gets more advanced than that at some point.
Yeah.
But if I did regular sitting meditation during the day, I would fall asleep. Like,
you're right,
I decided to walk around and get some vitamin E.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's mainly a mindfulness type of a meditation.
What is that thing called again?
Insight Timer.
Insight Timer. It's an app on a phone.
There's an app for it.
Yeah, that's right.
So I went to a Zen Buddhist retreat up in the woods, up in the mountains, and it was really hard. But we did one thing I really did enjoy was the walking meditation, and like, when I first like saw that we were going to do walking meditation, at least how we did it was, it's a very kind of slow, kind of methodical, and we would do it without shoes on. Of course, if you're at work, you would not. But I mean, it's literally like one footstep after your next footstep after your next. I mean, it's very slow and just your breathing. And you're taking those very concerted, you know, you think about, you know, your footfall and everything. So it's very, I mean, it's more comfortable than being seated for me. So I should probably do it more. But it was, I really enjoyed it. And, you know, we would do maybe 15 minutes of that in between the longer meditation sessions. But that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's, I'm sorry.
I was going to say one more thing about that. And one thing I've learned through the walking meditation is just how complicated and complex all your movements really are.
Uh-huh.
You kind of take it for granted, but then once you do it really slowly and you think about and feel every movement, it's really quite complex what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Everything works.
It's amazing we can walk in it,
yeah.
You know. So, yeah, a real walking meditation is a – when I've participated in them, they're very slow and methodical. So, you know, even at work, if you did that type of meditation, you'd still kind of stand out that you're doing something different, right? Because you're not talking to people or anything either. But you can be – well, you know, it's just a real – the Zen thing, right? You guys, when you walk, you walk. That's all you do. So
most of them get you to walk back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You'll be noticed for doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not subtle. But you know, that said, you can go out and the idea is to be mindful. You know, if anybody's taken any of them, like mindfulness-based stress reduction classes or just being aware of what you're doing in that moment. So rather than focusing on our breathing like we do when we do a concentration meditation, watch our breath, just watch everything that kind of comes into your mind stream. And you can get out and walk and do that and walk like at a regular pace. You don't want to run. I guess you could, but, you know, walk and just try to do it very mindfully. And that's a form of meditation. You can do the same thing when you're driving. You really should be doing it all the time. And, you know, but when you tell people, oh, I meditate when I drive, that freaks them out a little bit, you know. Because we, you know, that would scare me. But actually, if you said I'm being very mindful of my driving, like I'm being very mindful of my breath, I feel more comforted knowing that the person next to me is being very mindful of their driving instead of driving mindlessly. Huh? Yeah, you can do it at a stoplight, a stop sign, take a breath. You know, sometimes those kind of triggers, you know, cues can kind of get you to think, bring yourself back into the moment, which is what you're doing when you're doing your breathing meditation, right? You find when your mind wanders away, you bring it back to that focus. And so you can do that with any kind of routine task or easy to do that kind of stuff with. And, you know, when you think about when we first learned to walk, it was a challenging thing to do. But it became so second nature. Now, so many of the things that we do were difficult when we first, everything was difficult when we first learned to do it. And then it just becomes easier and easier the more we practice it. And that's what happens with some of the analytical meditations and the concentration. It just becomes easier the more we practice with these emotions and ideas and things that come up. So again, kind of got way off your topic. You know, and you can also, I would say, you can sit and stare at a book. If I sat and closed my eyes, people would, at work, well, I work at home, so it's no big deal. But if, you know, if I was at a conference room and did that or someplace and did that at work in my cube, people would think something was up. But if I propped the book in front of me, I could get away with that, you know? Or if I had something going on my computer screen, a spreadsheet, you know, I could probably get away with it. If I wasn't looking at the spreadsheet, I could probably just sit there and, all right, for 5 minutes, I'm just going to stare at this thing, you know, and watch my breathing. You might be able to pull it off. So, were you going to say something
else? I was going to say, I work from home maybe one day a week, but I'll sometimes just put,
you know, you could pull it up on, you know, YouTube or whatever, but, you know, where they have, because I like mantras.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, I might put, you know, a particular mantra that plays that I can kind of just listen to and kind of focus on for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then be like, okay, I'm good. And now I can go on to my next thing.
Good. Yeah. So the idea is just to, you know, like, you know, you're shaking that snow globe up about halfway during the day and just take a minute to just kind of let some of that stuff settle out a little bit before you start shaking it up again, you know. And at some point you realize, oh, I've got the ability to settle all this stuff out a lot, you know. And then you start doing that a lot. So let's do maybe squeeze off a couple of meditations, and these will be the analytical ones. We're gonna spend just a minute going through that, and then we'll talk a little bit more. This is out of that Kathleen McDonald. You can tell I probably have one of the early editions here. The whole thing's falling apart. It doesn't look anything like this book anymore, but we do sell it out there. And this is on appreciating our human life, which is one of the meditations. They call it precious human rebirth. Of course, now the Buddhists, you know, they have that the little the Buddhists have, you know, they believe in rebirth, that we get cycled through this again and again. You don't have to believe in that to still be, to appreciate what you have. So that's what we're going to kind of focus on here for just a minute. So take a couple of breaths. Get yourself comfortable in your meditation posture. Take a few breaths in and out and just kind of let everything go. So the idea of this meditation, we typically compare our lives to those around us that are better off than we are. And so we fail to realize how well we have it. So this will help us to develop a perspective on our own life. Try to imagine what it would be like to be an animal. Deeply ignorant, with no potential for mental or spiritual development. Maybe controlled by others, if there's humans controlling you. Constantly in a perpetual round of hunger and thirst, always looking for food and water. Heat and cold. And then living in fear of death, that some other animal is going to eat you. And that would be true if you lived in the ocean, or if you're a reptile, or a bird, or a mammal. You can even take this meditation back and think about insect realms and being in that body. Or imagine what it's like being a beggar on the streets of Calcutta. Or living in the deserts in Africa. Or some other area of the world where you're constantly in need of food and water, and spend your whole waking time seeking that. There's no time or opportunity to think about much else. You're human, but you really have little opportunity for spiritual development. you could imagine what it's like to have a physical disability that would make you bedridden. Or imagine living in a country where there's political and social oppression. So it's easy to read or talk about this, but try to really think about what it would be like to be in that situation, one of those situations. The beggar or the animal. Think about the current problems that you have and how they compare to what one of these other beings might have. Now to bring to mind all the good qualities and advantages of your life. You're a human being, one of 7 billion on a planet. But you live in a good area. You have friends and family to support you. You have an intelligent mind and a loving heart. Despite our discontent with our political system sometimes, we still live in a country that's comparatively free of social and political oppression. We have countless opportunities to pursue creative, intellectual, and social interests. Opportunities to go about anywhere and do about anything. You enjoy a good standard of living. And because of all those benefits, you have the ability to investigate, understand, and transform your mind through these practices. Now think about how few people or creatures on this earth share these freedoms and chances that you have. When you consider this deeply, you begin to realize how rare and precious a life like yours really is. When you realize the opportunities that you have, then you have to decide how you best want to spend the time, either developing your mind. You can seek other pleasures, but this opportunity is huge. Were you able to kind of put your mind into those different positions to some degree, or have develop a sense of empathy and to see what opportunities you have compared to what other creatures have on this planet? So that would be an analytical meditation. And if you do that same meditation, you can take that deeper and deeper. The more you can develop a sense of empathy and understand what other situations are like compared to what you have, the stronger that sense of gratitude, contentment, whatever. I don't know what feelings came up. Yes.
So towards the end, I actually had felt really grateful, and so much so that I felt like this is a moment and not to squander it and to actually share it with all. It's kind of like it went full circle to where I'm like, what do I do with this blessing? I should share it with all of the things that we first talked about, and like with animals and those that are like the beggar, and like there's a bigger purpose. At first I was like, and it's really great because I can do what I want. And then I was like, and what am I going to do with that though?
Yeah. What you're going to do with that is help those, right?
Yeah, exactly. It kind of went full circle.
Yeah.
So I thought that was
good.
Really cool.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you. Yeah, you can grow and grow and grow that sense of compassion. You know, the more you think about that, the bigger it gets. Anybody else? We have 10 minutes, and I have one more meditation I want to do, just to give you a taste of it, okay? And this is also, this is one that you will be in the handouts called, this is a little bit different. It's kind of, you know, I said there is concentration and analytical. This kind of falls more towards the analytical, but it's actually a visualization. We did the body scan the first time where you imagined everything kind of relaxing. So this will be similar, but we'll see where this one goes, okay? So, once again, get yourself comfortable. Take a few breaths. Get your feet flat, your back straight. Calm your mind a little bit. Start by focusing your attention on your breath. Focus on the inhalation and exhalation. As you exhale, imagine all the negative energy, past mistakes, distorted conceptions, disturbed emotions, all leave your body. Visualize the negative energy like soot or smoke, and then send it out into space where it disappears completely. And as you inhale, imagine all the positive energy in the universe enters your body with the breath in form of pure, radiant light. And visualize the light coming into your nostrils, down in your body, and pervading out into every atom and cell, every organ. Just continue with that experience for a little while. Negativities, distorted conceptions, being exhaled, positive energy, pure light being inhaled. Okay. Be able to do that visualization and kind of keep that going for a little while. A little different. Similar to the body scan we did the first time. We'll have one more visualization, I think, next week. Use a ball light. I don't think I did that one yet, did I? Okay. Any questions or thoughts about what we did this evening or about anything that's gone on the last 4 weeks? Yes, please. Microphone on its way.
What are good resources if you're pretty new to meditation?
Okay, good question. There's a list of, I think there's a list of books on that website too. This one, How to Meditate, is a good one. Meditation for Dummies is actually a pretty good one. That's out there. There's the Insight Timer app. That is a guided meditation, so you can listen. You know, someone's talking as you do some of the meditations. I think it probably also has some that just bells, timers. Yeah, they have some that are just like that. Yeah. There's a lot of books. Attention Revolution is a good one. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there. The idea, and you weren't here the first time, the whole idea of this is to become familiar with what's going on inside our head rather than become more familiar with what's going on the outside. And through that process, we can change the lens and our perspective of everything on the outside. Okay. Other questions? Yes, sir.
What's the website you're referring to?
It's the Kadampa Center. What is it? Kadampa.org or something like that?
Is it Kadampa-center.org?
I know what you mean.
Yeah, okay, good.
And there's class materials on that website.
Yeah, all of the handouts are on that website and references too, I think. So go there. And I think the recordings, this gets recorded too, right? Okay, so it's on the YouTube that you can go back if you want to watch the first 4, 3, if you're interested in that. Yes, sir.
I wonder, do you have the medication 1-1 and November and December?
So the way this normally works is this is a 5-week course, and then there's a brief period of time, and then they start another 5-week course called Buddhism in a Nutshell. And that'll just be an overview of Buddhism in totality. And I think that, and they do touch on meditation a little bit in there. And so they alternate this class and that class. So this will probably happen sometime at the beginning of next year again, the Meditation 101. And then there's Discovering Buddhism, which is a 2-year program that I think that each module is 7 weeks. And they just delve into each of the different areas of Buddhism a little bit deeper. Yes, sir.
Do you have a high-level meditation course?
A high-level meditation course?
Yeah.
There are some more advanced teachings that take place. Geshe Gelug and some of the other monks will do some other teachings. Those often occur on either Wednesday night. There were some classes that were being offered on Friday evenings for a while. Now he's gone. He's on leave right now, but they'll probably start those back up on a Wednesday night. Yes.
Discovering Buddhism, one of the 7-week modules is How to Meditate. It's on meditation, and that's one of the early ones in the 2-year cycle, I believe.
Okay. So they'll do more on meditation there too. And then we get a lot of guest speakers here that'll spend time working on different meditations too.
And Sunday mornings at 9.
That's
there's,
right.
There's an hour-long meditation, and the middle section of that is a walking meditation if you want to come and learn from some people. And Andre, I think, still leads that.
He still does that. So I think the 20 minutes of sitting, 20 walking, and another 20 sitting.
So on the Sunday morning, does somebody lead the meditation?
It's not guided.
It's not guided. It's anyone that wants to can just show up, and it's an hour. And I think there's about, it's divided into 3 20-minute segments.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 8:28. You might beat the crowd. Yeah, probably not. It's going to be ongoing. Next, is the fair still next week too?
No.
Oh, it's not.
It's next Sunday.
It's the last day. Okay. All right. So next Tuesday, traffic, whatever normal is, I don't know. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Be careful going home.